Washington versus the people, and we're ready to hear from the petitioner.
May it please the court, my name is Todd Johnson. I'm a deputy state public defender, and I represent Ms. Angela Washington in this appeal. The court granted certiorari in this case in order to address two questions. The first being whether a defendant can assert an affirmative defense to the specific intent crime of harassment. And second, if so, whether the defendant must first admit to the specific intent in order to be able to assert self-defense as an affirmative defense. Self-defense is an affirmative defense to the specific intent crime of harassment because self-defense provides a legal justification for a defendant's conduct. And the defendant, that conduct being the use of physical force against a reasonable belief of a threat and a reasonable use of force to repel that threat. The prosecution must affirmatively disprove a claim that a defendant's conduct was legally justified and done with a purpose of self-defense before a defendant can be legally convicted of a crime. This is an additional factual issue which rises to the level on par with the original elements of the offense and must be disproven by the prosecution. This additional factual issue is the essence of an affirmative defense pursuant to this court's rulings, specifically in People v. Huckleberry.
Mr. Johnson,
yes,
can I ask you a question? Could you discuss how acting reasonably under self-defense is not mutually exclusive with acting with a specific intent to annoy and harass?
Acting with specific intent pursuant to 18-1-501 means that you are acting with, you have a specific purpose or objective in mind. You're acting with the specific purpose of causing the result prescribed by a statute. But this court is, People v. Fink, found with lesser mental states, such as reckless and criminal negligence, that the reasonable actions of a that the district attorney, in order to prove reckless conduct or criminal negligence, would have had to affirmatively disprove, in order for it to be found reckless or criminally negligent, would have to affirmatively disprove that a defendant's actions were reasonable.
I don't think there's any question about that.
Okay, I'm sorry, Justice.
But the question is, they seem factually inconsistent to me, certainly as applied to this case. And so if you don't admit that you're acting with intent to annoy, you're not acting in self-defense. That's the crux of the issue for me. And I wonder if you could just address that. I understand the burdens and so forth and definitions.
Justice Bender, there was a factual dispute raised here, certainly regarding what actions were taken by either party. It is not unreasonable for a person to act with an intent to harass, annoy, or alarm someone as a means of self-defense. The actus, the mens rea, applies to a specific act. Self-defense is a justification for a defendant's conduct.
So is it a factual determination then, depending on the particular case? And in this case, I take it your argument is that the defendant was trying to harass, annoy the victim in order to make the victim leave her alone, right? Something like that.
That is a conclusion that certainly the defense did not admit to even the specific intent of harass or alarm. However, the jury could have found, based on the evidence, that Ms. Washington was acting with an intent to harass, annoy, or alarm. However, just because she was, that was, again, the means of effecting self-defense. Self-defense is a justification for the defendant's conduct in a bigger sense.
So in other words, what you're saying is, look, I acted in self-defense here. I did whatever I did with respect to her, but I acted in reasonable self-defense under the circumstances, period. That's your position. And that's not necessarily inconsistent with the acting with the intent to harass and so forth.
No, Your Honor. I don't believe it is inconsistent.
Thank you.
Again, the self-defense statute says a person is justified, legally justified in the use of physical force based upon a reasonable belief in a threat and a reasonable amount of force to repel that threat.
Let me just restate that. I want to make sure I understand it. And that is, what you're indicating is that if the defendant acted in self-defense, then that's a complete justification, and it's irrelevant whether or not he had the specific intent that's required in this crime. That is, he may have acted in self-defense with the intent to harass as a means, or he may have acted in self-defense without that intent whatsoever. Do I understand you correctly?
Yes, Justice. Self-defense, again, is a justification. There may be a criminal intent behind the actions, or what would in other circumstances be considered a criminal intent.
The way that I just explained it and you agreed, wouldn't it be true that it's actually self-defense is acting in two different, possibly in two different ways? That is, it might be negating an element of the defense, but not necessarily.
Element of the mental state.
Element of the mental state, yeah. That is, it could be negating the intent to harass, annoy, or alarm, but not necessarily. It might also be consistent with that intent.
To a large extent, I would agree with that, Your Honor. I mean, I'm not saying it's completely, the mental state is not completely relevant to the issue of self-defense. What I'm saying is self-defense basically becomes an additional element to the charge when it's raised appropriately, and that if the actions are motivated by the purpose of self-defense, then the specific intent behind the defendant's actions, self-defense is a complete defense to the charge, regardless of whether there was what would otherwise be criminal intent, or regardless of whether it would be non-criminal intent.
You stick with that just a minute and kind of flesh out a little more how you see it as being possible for one to act with the intent that's required for self-defense for that purpose, and at the same time be acting with the specific intent to annoy or alarm?
I think the easiest example would be to address the issue of an intent to alarm. It's not certainly uncommon for someone to say, I was defending myself, I was trying to scare them off. I believe this court, and I apologize, the case escapes me at this point, but this court previously addressed the issue of self-defense in the context of a felony menacing charge. Felony menacing is knowingly or recklessly putting somebody in fear of imminent serious bodily injury. They're trying to scare them off. So you could have an intent to scare somebody off, but your purpose is to defend yourself, which is justified under 18.1704 under the Constitution or the statutory right to self-defense.
And to scare them off, you take to be within the definition and within the specific intent that's required for harassment to annoy. Scaring somebody off is annoying them or alarming them?
Potentially alarming, I think I would fit more directly. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
You could help me with how this works. The defendant would have to make some kind of factual showing to the court, basically, to submit the instruction to the jury, right?
That's correct, Justice. It's always been the law that there must be some credible evidence, which is a rephrasing of the previous scintilla of an evidence, before the court is required to give a self-defense instruction to the jury.
What was the some credible evidence in this case, Mr. Johnson?
Your Honor, the credible evidence was the testimony of Ms. Nellie Wright, who testified that, contrary to Mr. Jerome Langston, the complaining witness in the case, that Ms. Washington had not been bumping him, that there was a verbal argument, certainly, but that at the time of the physical contact, which was admitted to by the defense, that Mr. Langston was, quote-unquote, chest-to-chest with her, in her face, and there was later testimony that he was shouting obscenities and specifically said, you will never get rid of me. Someone who is, certainly it's not an unreasonable inference for a jury to find, that somebody who is chest-to-chest, in somebody's face, yelling obscenities, that Ms. Washington could have been justified in feeling threatened at that point. That would be a reasonable belief on her part.
What do we do with the fact, and I think these are the facts, but you could correct me, of the prior string of circumstances where she goes at him? You know, he shows up, she goes at him.
Your Honor, that was testimony by Mr. Jerome Langston.
Right.
It was specifically rebutted by Ms. Wright, the eyewitness to the incident, who indicated she had seen nothing of Ms. Washington charging, Mr. Langston also testified that there was some later contact out in the street, that Ms. Washington followed him out in the street and believed placed her hand on his face. Ms. Washington testified that Mr. Langston was on the other side of the street, Ms. Washington was on this side of the street. These are factual disputes to be resolved by a jury after a proper instruction on the law. A defendant does not first have to admit to the couple's specific intent of harassment before they can assert self-defense. Self-defense does not negate the culpable mental state or specific intent within the charge of harassment because a person could reasonably believe that they are, who believes, reasonably believes they're about to be assaulted, may very well act with a specific intent to harass or alarm their attacker as a means of self-defense. If their actions are done with the purpose of self-defense, however, their actions are justified under the law. I would ask to save the remaining amount of my time for a rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Debbie Pearson. I'm a deputy district attorney with the 4th Judicial District. At the table is Kate Swenson. She is currently an intern with our office. Why is the question raised by the Angela Washington case so important? It's important to the prosecution of all types of cases across the board because when the trial court accepts an affirmative defense, agrees to an affirmative defense instruction, it adds another element to what the people have to prove. We have to prove all of our elements, and then we also have to disprove the affirmative defense. So this is an important case in what the court is deciding here today. I want to talk about what Ms. Washington agrees to. Ms. Washington agrees that there was physical conduct, there was contact between the two parties. Ms. Washington did not testify during the trial. There were two witnesses, as the court recalls, from the record. There was Mr. Jerome Langston, who is the victim in the case, and then there was another individual by the name of Nellie Wright. That was the only two witnesses. And in here, it is defense counsel who says the defendant is agreeing that physical conduct, contact occurred. And that is not enough. It's not enough to warrant the affirmative defense instruction. This court has talked about whether the force or threat of force, if that's enough for affirmative defense instruction. If that was enough, we would have it in so many specific criminal cases. And I'd like to give the court a couple of examples. It was the Dilling case that the court decided in 1982. And this was one where there was an argument between the victim and the defendant. The victim called the defendant a name. The defendant struck her a couple of times in the face. The victim retrieved a pipe from her car, chased the defendant. Ultimately, the defendant retrieved a gun and pointed it at the victim. Now, the case talks about misidentification, and there's an argument that the defendant wasn't actually the person who pointed the weapon. But what's important in that case is the rationale that this court discussed, and it was that it supported the trial court refusing the affirmative defense instruction in this particular case. And the court said, were we to hold that a self-defense instruction should have been given here, such an instruction would be necessary in virtually every case where force or threat of force is used, and we just declined to impose such a requirement. Now, the Court of Appeals also followed this rationale in Whatley, and that was in 2000, where a defendant, the facts were the defendant says, yes, I got into a fight with the police officer, but the defendant denies any assault. Defendant said he wrestled around with the officer. He pushed toward the officer, and he denied causing any injury. So he denied causing any injury. He accepts the fact, he agrees that, that physical contact occurred, but there was no evidence that he reasonably believed unlawful force was about to be used, and he needed to defend himself.
Kirsten, it seems to me that those cases in your argument, it goes to whether or not there's evidence to justify self-defense in this case, which is not the overriding legal issue, which kind of interests me, which is whether I thought it was appropriate to, that a defendant can raise inconsistent defenses. Could you address that?
Well, I think a defendant can, and I think the trial court made the right decision in this case as far as allowing the defendant to make the argument that she was acting in self-defense.
But without giving an instruction?
Right, without giving the affirmative defense instruction. And I think that was that, and that was okay, because my understanding is that a defendant can propose multiple theories by arguing, you know, self.
I suppose the defendant can argue anything.
by arguing the self-defense, it could serve to negate one of the elements that the people have to prove. So, you know, I think the trial court was appropriate in that regard, but I don't think there in this particular case that
maybe. Maybe you're right about that in terms of the evidence. Let's assume for the sake of argument that there was evidence, reasonable evidence, credible evidence of self-defense. Just now, what should we have? Why shouldn't we have permitted? Do you have to negate? You have to admit that I had the intent, specific intent in this case, to get that evidence, to get that instruction?
Well, I do think you do have to admit that. And the reason why is because this particular affirmative defense of self-defense, as the kind of the historical case law provides, is that it's an emergency. It's not it's meant to for people to be allowed to protect themselves with an imminent threat of physical force. And so by just saying there was physical contact and not admitting to a criminal offense, the criminal offense that has two parts, the mens rea and the actus rea, the question becomes, is the person entitled to the full justification, the full exemption that an affirmative defense would require?
I don't want to re-argue with Mr. Johnson. I mean, my understanding of what his argument is that, look, all I have to do is show that there's some evidence, we're assuming there is for a minute, for the sake of argument, and that I acted reasonably under the circumstances. So that could be I had the specific intent to annoy or intent, or it could be inconsistent with it, there's no logical connection that the trial judge made in this case. It's sort of as a matter of law, not as to what happened under the facts in this case.
And I think as a matter of law, the defendant does have to admit to what they did and not just a portion of it. I think
to get this affirmative defense, even though he has a right to assert inconsistent defenses.
I do think a defendant has a right to assert inconsistent in defenses.
And Ms. Kirsten, can I just explore the argument that you're making that the defendant has to admit the offense? How does a defendant who doesn't testify do that, in your view?
Well, I think the defendant can do that by other evidence, and it doesn't have to be evidence that he or she calls on their part of the case. It can be evidence.
So you're saying, when you say the defendant has to admit the offense, do you simply mean that the evidence has to show the offense?
Absolutely. Yes. And that's
why is that any different from, I mean, that's the people's burden. It's the people's burden at mid-trial to have done that. Why isn't that sufficient? Sufficiently satisfy your concern that the defendant has admitted the offense, the people have, in the light most favorable to them, presented that by mid-trial.
Well, I think that could certainly happen in a case where You know, we have to prove the elements of the person acted with the intent to arouse a noise alarm and physical contact occurred. And as part of our presentation of evidence, there, for example, if in this particular case there was more information about the detailed language that Ms. Washington used, that would go to show, as Mr. Johnson argued, would go to show alarm, that she was alarmed, that she was in fear, that she was in fear of imminent physical contact, conduct, then there may very well have been justification for the trial court to allow the full affirmative defense, which would be the full justification. But here, we do not have it. It does not raise that
level. But aren't you just
level.
Arguing that the evidence hasn't raised that defense? I mean, I'm having trouble distinguishing your argument,
okay.
Which is that, you know, the evidence is, there is not some evidence of self-defense, and so it shouldn't, and so there shouldn't be an instruction, which I think is part of your argument. But then you're also arguing that the defendant has to admit the crime in order to have the benefit of self-defense. And I'm trying to focus on the defendant has to admit the crime.
Okay.
And I don't quite understand what you mean by that or how a defendant would actually do that, particularly where the defendant didn't testify.
And I will focus my attention on that portion of it. I think in order to, you know, the defendant has to admit presence, admit that there was I struggle with the word admit. Because
well, that's what I'm struggling with,
because
I think, too.
Because we, you know, the burden is always on the people. But it's, you know, in self-defense, the defendant is taking responsibility and saying, yes, I reacted. I reacted in this fashion because I was in fear of imminent physical unlawful contact by this other person. So they do have to admit to their mental state and admit to their acts that coincide. I don't think they're allowed to hedge. I don't think they're to say, well, sure, I'll admit there was physical contact there, and then you know, come up with a reason, you know, down the road to rationalize that particular conduct. I think the person has to take full responsibility, and I think that can be bore out as far as if Ms. Washington had said, you know, had there were
okay,
remarks.
Okay, so hang on. How do they do that? The lawyer says, my client takes full responsibility, but it was self-defense. Is that what you're talking about? Or you were saying earlier the evidence shows it?
Well, no, I think first the evidence would have to show it, and the trial court would have to determine that there was some credible evidence showing that and that could be part of the people's presentation of the case, saying that there's some credible evidence that it's reasonable. It appears this person would be in fear, and would be, and that they reacted in this way. They reacted by perhaps committing the crime of harassment, perhaps committing the crime of second degree assault. But they reacted in this fashion because of this immediate threat. So I think that can be bore out in the people's case. And so, yes, then I think the defense attorneys say, look, we take responsibility absolutely for this crime, but here's the justification. Here's this exemption, and here's what the people have to disprove.
I just want to, I'm sorry to do this, but propose a hypothetical, a simple assault case. Defendant doesn't testify. One or two witnesses testify inconsistently that, you know, the defendant struck first, that the other person struck first, and the defendant didn't do anything. So there's, you know, lots of inconsistent testimony. The defendant's argument is, Well, the testimony shows I didn't hit him, but if you didn't believe that, there's other testimony that I only did that after he struck first. You already said the defendant can have these inconsistent defenses. The scenario that I just gave you, the defendant doesn't admit to anything. He just says the evidence, some of the evidence shows I didn't do it, and some of the evidence shows I did it in self-defense. Is there something wrong with that scenario? Would that violate your concern about admissions?
Well, I think it would. I mean, but I think what you're explaining is that the defendant would have a general denial defense, you know, denying that I committed the elements of the crime, and then also have
based on inconsistent testimony.
Based on the testimony. And I think, you know, in that situation, I think the trial court would have to look at it and say, you know, is there some credible evidence that justifies giving this type
of... So that wouldn't be looking at defendant's admission at all. That would simply be looking at, did the evidence rate, was there some evidence of self-defense?
Right, but I think by raising some evidence of self-defense, the defendant, you know, shows, you know, participation, shows they were mentally present, knew what they were doing with third degree assault. They'd have to be aware of their circumstances to understand what they were doing. There'd have to be some, you know, using the term admission of a physical act or a reaction to that imminent threat.
So in this particular case, I know your time's out, but I just wanted to ask you, what's missing in this case? I understood you to say, in theory, the defendant could have take the position that this defendant wants to take, but not in this case. So what's missing?
We don't have any evidence of her intent to harass, annoy, or alarm. We don't have any evidence of any kind of reasonable belief that she was in fear. None, as far as that's part of the record. So I think those are the two things that are lacking in this case.
Thank you.
If there's any questions, thank you.
A defendant who is asserting self-defense is not hedging. They are not denying responsibility. They are saying my actions were justified under the law by my reasonable belief in the imminent threat and my reasonable use of force. The state made the decision to charge them. The defendant does not have to claim or admit I committed a crime before being allowed to say that their actions were justified under the law. In People v. Huckleberry, this court stated that regarding the affirmative defense of self-defense, having acknowledged presence at and participation in the event, the participant, in effect, justifies the conduct on grounds deemed by law to be sufficient to render the participant exempt from criminal responsibility for the consequences of the conduct. An inconsistent defense would be, I wasn't even there, but if so, I was defending myself. That is inconsistent. By all that the defendant is required to do to assert self-defense is to acknowledge presence at and participation in the event, and also to present some credible evidence regarding a reasonable belief in imminent threat in the use of unlawful physical force against them or another person, and the use of a reasonable amount of force to repel that threat. In this case, Ms. Washington did present credible evidence from an eyewitness that Mr. Langston was in her face, chest to chest, yelling obscenities. It was a reasonable inference for the jury to find that she had a reasonable belief that unlawful physical force was about to be used against her. If, in fact, it hadn't already been, although it was never clearly established.
Oh, okay, I'm having a little bit of confusion here because, you know, all that's presented, and I assume the argument was made. They just didn't agree with it. I mean, the jury heard that evidence.
That is correct.
They disagreed with it.
I think the reason Ms. Washington was prejudiced in this case, however, Justice, is because the jury could have believed Ms. Wright's version of events. And they could have, therefore, thought that Ms. Washington
was acting with an intent to harass, annoy, or alarm Mr. Langston when she shoved him off.
Mm-hmm.
The reason Ms. Washington was prejudiced is because the jury was not instructed on the legal justification for the purpose of self-defense. They were not instructed that it is a complete defense if they found she was, whether she was acting with that intent or not. Mm-hmm. They were not instructed properly that if her purpose was self-defense, and if that self-defense is justified under the law, it is a justification for her actions. I know it's been cited, but Ms. Washington's counsel was not allowed to directly argue self-defense. Certainly the jury was never instructed on self-defense. The record shows that Judge Hansen allowed the defendant to argue that Ms. Washington had an intent of defending herself merely as an element negating defense or an element negating issue, that she did not have the intent to.
Could I interrupt at this point? Because that's something that you just said that has really been inconsistent between the briefing and the argument. If I'm looking at one of the briefs, at least cites to a transcript that says that the trial court did allow Washington to argue self-defense, but did not agree to raise the affirmative defense by way of instruction. So in my mind, I always sort of visualize this case as the question whether or not this was just simply a question of fact or a question of law. And I guess I would really very much like to have that issue resolved so I can more clearly define it for myself.
Just as I'm looking, I think I can cite to the court.
The transcript that's cited here is page 69, lines 23 to 25, and page 70, lines 1 to 2. You can check it out at a later time. The bottom line is, it seems sort of like an odd trial to me if the trial judge said, you can argue self-defense, you can bring it up, but I'm not going to instruct on it. Is that your point? And if that's your point, maybe you have a point, but then how is there really prejudicial error if, in fact, the jury heard that there was this whole self-defense problem but didn't buy it?
Judge, I don't believe that my understanding of the transcript that the judge did not allow self-defense. I would point the court
did not allow argument of self-defense or the instructed on self-defense.
She only allowed counsel to argue that Ms. Wright did not have the intent to harass nor alarm. She only had the intent to defend herself.
I guess the record will have to figure that all out for us. Thank you.
My time is up, Justice. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the court, I want to thank counsel for your arguments. The case stands submitted in the court.